Welcome to A Time of Hope with highlights of last Sunday's worship service. I'm Russell Cobb, the pastor of the United Church of Christ of California in the Salem United Church of Christ. We continue to live stream our worship services at 10:30 each Sunday. You can watch our regular Sunday worship service at our website, www.calmo-ucc.org. We have tentatively set a date of June 7th to start meeting again in person for worship. The leadership and I are working on guidelines to follow for when we start meeting again on the first Sunday of June. This Sunday, we honor our four high school seniors, Chris Castle, Caitlin Adams, Kiefer Kessner, and Alyssa Sabartinelli. We'll be in Ecclesiastes 11:7 through chapter 12, verse 14. We'll continue our sermon series, Can't Get No Satisfaction, by encouraging our seniors to remember what is important. Ecclesiastes 12:1 says, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them." That is one of the keys to a successful life, to remember what we should and not dwell on the things that we shouldn't. I look forward to honoring our seniors this morning. The last several weeks have been very stressful and filled with uncertainty. Psalm 112, verses 6 and 7 reminds us of the security of our faith in God during trying times. Surely the righteous will never be shaken. They will be remembered forever. They will have no fear of bad news. Their hearts are steadfast, trusting the Lord. Don't let your heart and faith be shaken. Have no fear. Trust in the Lord. Thank you for listening. And our special music this morning will be from Garrett Berger, one of our high school students.
Little baby told God, hey, I'm kind of scared. Don't really know if I want to go down there. From your looks, I'm a little blue ball. That's a great big place, and I'm so small. Always gonna be alright. A loving angel.
Thank you, Garrett. Our scriptures will be Lauren Frederick and Lauren Spillers.
The first scripture lesson comes from Proverbs chapter 31, verses 15 through 21. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. Here ends the first lesson.
Our second scripture reading for this morning is from Proverbs 31, verses 25 through 31. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Honor her for all that her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate.
Ladies, for helping out with that. And I just want to say again, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers that are out there this morning, especially my mom, Carol. She raised three boys with all of our sporting activities. She may have not known all the right terminology at the appropriate time for the appropriate sport, even our, you know, all of her grandchildren that she would go see their sports, but she was always there supporting them. And so I just want to say happy Mother's Day to her, and also to my favorite mother-in-law, Marilyn. Happy Mother's Day to her. We celebrated not only Mother's Day with her yesterday, but her 80th birthday. All of her children were there. We did a lot of projects outside and had dinner outside and just enjoyed a beautiful day together. So I just want to say happy Mother's Day to them. We started a new sermon series last Sunday out of the book of Ecclesiastes. Can't get no satisfaction looking at the book of Ecclesiastes. And I found one verse that mentioned mothers in Ecclesiastes, chapter 5, verse 15. It says, everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. We talk about everybody having mothers. And one of the books that I like to read to my daughters when they were little was Are You My Mother? From Dr. Seuss. And I'm not going to read all of it, of course. I'm just going to read a few clips from it. But the little bird is having a hard time finding his mother. So he goes to all these different creatures, all these different things, and he finds out that they're not his mother. The kitten was not his mother. The hen was not his mother. The dog was not his mother. So the bird went on. Now he came to a cow. Are you my mother? He said to the cow. How could I be your mother? Said the cow. I'm a cow. The kitten and the hen were not his mother. The dog and the cow were not his mother. Did he have a mother? He says, I did have a mother, said the baby bird. I know I did. I have to find her. I will, I will. And so he goes to a bunch of other people and items that he comes across. And finally, his mother comes back into the picture. Just then the mother bird came back to the tree. Do you know who I am? She said to her baby. Yes, I know who you are, said the baby bird. You are not a kitten. You are not a hen. You are not a dog. You are not a cow. You are not a boat or a plane or a snort. You are a bird, and you are my mother. And so we celebrate mothers today because they are a special, special creation by God. And we see some great mothers in the Bible like Mary. We have Moses' mom and everything she did to make sure Moses survived. We have two great mothers mentioned in 2 Timothy 1:5. Paul writes Timothy and says, I'm reminded of your sincere faith, which first lived in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded now lives in you also. His sincere faith that first lived in two ladies before it became his own. Timothy saw this sincere faith every day from two women. They lived it, and it was real to him. That verse tells you a bedrock truth about faith in children. A preacher can preach the best sermons every Sunday. Sunday school teachers and VBS teachers can teach the most powerful lessons each Sunday, but they don't make the impact that real faith from a parent, a grandparent, a mom, and a dad makes. It's not even close. That's why we celebrate Mother's Day, because of the enormous impact they make on a child's life. Although we do see some bad moms in the Bible, there's one listed in 2 Kings 11. Her name was Athaliah, And this is what it says about her, that when she had learned that her son Ahaziah had died and that he was dead, she proceeded to destroy the whole royal family to protect herself and to protect other ones around her. Probably one of the worst moms in the Bible we find in the New Testament, her name was Herodias in Matthew chapter 14. We know kind of the story there, that she was the one that requested John the Baptist's head. She kind of told her daughter had a kind of a free item there to get from King Herod. He said, "I'll give you whatever you want." And Herodias whispered to her daughter, "I want John the Baptist's head on a platter, and you bring it to me." And so King Herod had it done, and all of a sudden here comes this daughter with the platter with the head of John the Baptist and gives it to her mother. What a great Mother's Day present that was. I'm sure if she was around today, she would have her own documentary or her own Dateline or 48-hour show for a show or a story like that. But this morning, we're going to look at great godly moms, specifically Hannah. If you'll turn to 1 Samuel chapter 1 and chapter 2, that's where we're going to be this morning. We see Hannah was married to Elkanah, but because she wasn't having children, he decided to marry another woman, Peninnah. There was conflict in the home and turmoil, and Elkanah loved Hannah more than Peninnah, but Peninnah was the one having children. She didn't let Hannah forget it. At the dinner table, Elkanah would give more food to Hannah because he loved her more, and this irritated Peninnah, so she would make sure that Hannah would know that she was the one having children. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. It says her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. Her rival was Peninnah, the second wife. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. This went on for several years. Peninnah had several children. It was a constant reminder. Anytime that they got around the table, anytime they were around each other, Hannah would see all the children that were blessed and all the interaction that Elkanah had with those children. But Hannah herself did not have children. The next verse of verse 8 of 1 Samuel 1 tells me that husbands are still as clueless about the emotions of their wives as they were back then as they are now, thousands of years ago. Look what he says to the woman he loves, Hannah, in her distress. He says, "Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you so downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons?" He was a faithful and religious, devout person, but he wasn't very sensitive. I can see Hannah's expression right now. I got to see in her eyes, she said, "You've got to be kidding me. Haven't you been watching all these years? Haven't you been paying attention to this other lady over there? Can't you see how much I want to have children? That this is a constant ache in my heart, and all you can say is, look how good you are? That you're better than 10 sons for me? And you're so great that it should be, you know, I shouldn't be sad at all. Just the privilege of being in your presence should give me great joy." It kind of shows you that guys have not learned all that much over the years about being sensitive to their wife's emotions. It reminds me of a few years ago, our girls were getting finished with high school, and it was just Betty and I around the house a lot of the time. And I asked her one afternoon, I said, "Honey," I said, "with the girls out of the house, you know, not around us too much anymore, you know, will I be enough to give you enough joy?" She didn't even hesitate. She didn't even give a pause to make me feel halfway decent. Her answer was quick and decisive. "No. No, you're not. Not even close." Now, that hurts a little bit because I just want to, you know, make it sound like it was a tough decision. But that's how important children are, and even grandchildren. But how did Hannah respond to this part of her life when she was not being blessed with children? She could have been bitter or angry towards God. She could have stopped going to church, like many do when God doesn't respond to their prayers the way that they like. But we see in verse 10 how Hannah responded. It says, "In her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. And she made a vow, saying, 'Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head.'" In her pain and her anguish, she approached God and she prayed to him through her tears. She used a term there that in this chapter had not been used until now. She said, "Lord Almighty, I know you're all powerful." We hear that term when we recite the Apostles' Creed. And it's used a lot of times after that. But she goes to God for power because he knows that he's the one that can bless her. And she says, if you'll bless me with a son, I'm going to set him apart. I'm going to give you him for your service. And that he would be set apart, that he would look, because by what he wore and by what he ate and how his hair was cut. They were called a Nazarite vow. This is the first and only vow made by a woman in the Old Testament. And Hannah made it because she wanted a child so desperately. No haircuts for him. I remember my first haircut. We have a picture of it. My grandpa Ed snuck me out of the house, took me down to the barber without my mom knowing it to get a haircut the way that he wanted it done. That was a special occasion for me and for lots of children, but not with Samuel or even Samson that we know later on. After she visited with the priest Eli, it says, her and her husband went to church, and after that they headed back home. Because of her prayer, because of Eli's blessing, she then became pregnant with Samuel. It says the Lord remembered her, and she gave birth to a son, Samuel. She nursed him and raised him for 3 years before fulfilling her promise and vow to God. She took him to Eli along with a valuable sacrifice. And when she came into church after 3 years, 3 years after she had made that vow to Eli and to God, this is what she says to Eli in verse 27 of 1 Samuel 1. She says, pardon me, my Lord. As surely as you live, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I ask him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord. Now, how hard was that? There's no record of any other children at this time for Hannah. Her one and only, for 3 years, the hugs, the kisses, the special words of love he told her. Now she has handed him over and will not get to see him anymore on a daily basis. I know how I feel after a few days of not seeing my grandkids on FaceTime or in person or seeing some videos or pictures of them on Facebook. But she made a vow and she trusted God. We would see later in 1 Samuel chapter 7 that Samuel does move back to his hometown. We don't know if his parents are alive then, but he does move back to his hometown. But there's no more mention of Hannah in Samuel's stories. But she kept her vow. Boy, that's hard for people to do. We make vows a lot of times in a time of stress. There's a movie, Burt Reynolds, and it's made a long time ago called The End. He's dying. And he doesn't want to live anymore, but he's not, you know, he doesn't have the courage, in his opinion, to end his life himself. So he tries to get Dom DeLuise to end his life. And at the very last scene, he has swam all the way out into the ocean, Burt Reynolds has. And he's just going to drown himself. But as he gets out there to that point, he starts to realize that he wants to live, but he's not a very good swimmer. He doesn't think he has the strength to get back to shore. So he starts making vows to God. God, if you'll help me get back to the shore, I'll give you 50% of my gross income. And he keeps saying, you know, I'll be a better husband, I'll be a better father, I'll do all these different things. But as he gets closer to the shore, it goes from 50% of his income down to 10%. And then he gets on the shore and he finally makes it, you know, God, I know what I told you, but you know, you don't understand. And then Dom DeLuise comes out of nowhere and starts chasing him again with a knife. And now he's making that same vow to God again. God, I'll give you 50%. Hannah made a vow and she stuck to it. We see the prayer that she gives in chapter 2 of 1 Samuel, the prayer of praise. And after she left, you know, she left Samuel there, she praised God and thanks him for the blessing that she had for this child for those 3 years. But we see that Samuel was not left in the best spiritual situation. When you look closely at Eli and his two sons, the priest that Samuel is going to serve under, they were evil. But this is where Samuel was going to spend his early years. But his mom did stay in contact. When you read through there, it says that every year she would go up with her husband to the tabernacle to offer their annual sacrifice. She would make him a brand new linen ephod, an undergarment for a young man that was studying the priesthood. She would also make him a robe. And every time she came up, Eli the priest would bless her. And he would say, may the Lord give you children by this woman to take the place of the one she prayed for and gave to the Lord. And then they would go home. And it says the Lord was gracious to Hannah. After Samuel, she had 3 sons and 2 more daughters. And then it says Samuel grew up in the presence of the Lord. And look what it says about him. It says, boy, Samuel continued to grow in stature and favor with all the Lord, with all the people, it says in verse 26. It sounds a lot like the way Mary felt about Jesus when he was at the temple. It says she treasured all these things up in her heart when she saw Jesus teaching in the temple. And that Jesus continued to grow in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Mothers take special joy in watching their children grow and receive various accolades. I know because I see all of them on Facebook all through the week. about everything little Johnny or little Jane does. We have pride in our children. It's a given. Look at Mary and Hannah. What were they so proud of as mothers for their sons? That they were serving, that they were teaching, and that they were learning in the church. For Jesus, it was being in the temple at the age of 12. For Samuel, it was serving at Shiloh along Eli in the tabernacle, getting prepared for when he would be called to take over in a very trying spiritual time. Look how chapter 3 of 1 Samuel starts. It says, Samuel was thrust into a very tough spiritual time for the nation of Israel. It says, the boy Samuel ministered before the Lord under Eli. In those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. And that's where Samuel was walking into a place that was kind of spiritually sparse, spiritually destitute. Like we said earlier, we don't see Hannah's name mentioned again, and we don't see the other wives mentioned again. She taunted and she hurt Hannah. She mocked her. She made fun of her but Hannah stayed faithful at a time when many would not be staying faithful during a very sparse spiritual time. Penina has been forgotten by time, but Hannah has been remembered for her love for God and her love for her son, and she was blessed because of it. So what can we learn from Hannah's story this morning for mothers? Number one, God blesses special situations like Hannah. Before Hannah and after Hannah, we see that she is not the first or the last mother that had trouble conceiving children in the Bible that God blessed and used for greatness. We see Sarah and Abraham with Isaac. We see Rachel and Jacob. We see Samson's mom as well. We see Elizabeth and Zechariah with John the Baptist. Many times God's time and our time are rarely on the same timetable, but God can take hurtful situations and bring great joy and purpose for his kingdom out of it. Second, we see children are gifts from and to the Lord. Not just from, but to the Lord. Psalm 127 verses 3 and 4 says this, children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from him, like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Hannah realized that when she prayed to God for a son, he was a gift to her just as children are gifts to their mothers. We must desire to give our children to God. She prayed before and after her child was born. She made sure he had the right clothing after she had left him entrusted to Eli. She supported his ministry, and I'm sure she continued to pray for him all the remaining years of his life. At every one of our prayers, we pray regularly together, Betty and I. We try to pray for our children and our grandchildren. We try to pray for God to help them draw closer to God, to help God that God will use them in his service and that they will stay faithful and that we will be good examples for them. Proverbs 22:6 says this, start children off on the way that they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. The Apostle John wrote this in his second letter in verse 4. He says, it has given me great joy to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as the Father commanded us. Does it bring you great joy to see your children walking in the truth? Training them up when they're young so that when they're old, they're still following those ways and they're reminded of that faithfulness they were showed so long ago. We also learn that part of our giving our children to God is training them, teaching them in God's ways. We have our Right Now media camp. Parents have access to all kinds of videos that will strengthen their children spiritually and encourage them. Our Sunday school committee met this week, working on ways to continue to train and teach our children in the changed world around us. Talking about holding a virtual VBS this summer because it's important our children hear the message of love for God for them through his son, Jesus Christ. We also learn from the story of Hannah that walking with God doesn't take away life's struggles. How many years did Hannah experience so much unjust treatment at the hands of this fellow wife? She experienced years of anguish and sadness, but she was consistent in her faith. Even when she was weeping and felt bitterness and anger inside, is your lifestyle consistent in regards to faith? Do your children and grandchildren see it? In the midst of this great COVID-19 crisis, do they see you and hear you relying on your faith in God through very uncertain times? I didn't say perfect faith. I said consistent faith. Do they see your struggles, but then your determination to continue to grow stronger in your faith? That was Hannah. I'm sure there was days that she looked around and said, man, this is awful. This is terrible. And she would question whether she should continue to pray or still bring sacrifices to God, but she did. And because of that faithfulness, she was blessed. We see that God can produce miracles in dysfunctional families. This family was certainly not the best. The stress, the turmoil, the tension between all of them. But God was still in the midst working and comforting Hannah. We also see that prayers are measured by God, not by their length, but by their intensity. We see something about that in the model prayer that Jesus gives in Matthew 6. It's not the length of your prayers or the verbiage you use. It's the intensity and the connection. Hannah was committed to prayer, even when it hurt. It says she wept bitterly, but through her tears, she prayed. Have you ever prayed through tears? I know I have. I prayed through tears at the bed of my hospital bed of my oldest daughter right before she had surgery, at my grandpa's bed in the last few days of his life, when I've been discouraged and hurt, but God is still there listening. Not all of our prayers are perfect in the way that we want them to be. Look in verses 12 through 16 of 1 Samuel, how she prayed, Hannah. As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth before the Lord. Continue to see her mouth moving. Hannah was praying in her heart and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and he said to her, how long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine. Not so, my Lord, Hannah replied. I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I've been praying here out of my great anguish and grief. Eli answered, go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him. Out of her great anguish and hurt, she still prayed. But then she prayed a second prayer. If you look in chapter 2 and read the first 10 verses there, look how her prayer life has changed. Now, after she related to Eli, and rather she prayed to the Lord, she let them know that the burden that was on her heart had been lifted. She says, my heart rejoices in the Lord. There's no one holy like the Lord. He will guard the feet of his faithful servants. Her prayer was passionate. It was persistent. It was a prayer of promise and one of persuasion. She poured out her heart to God and to Eli. And once she did, she felt the peace that only comes from being God in your life and the foundation of your faith. We also learn that great things come from God when we are obedient and follow our commitments to Him. She stuck with her commitment to God after 3 years. My grandson Gannon just turned 3 a couple of weeks ago. I can't imagine handing him over to a spiritually broken priest with 2 twisted and evil sons, but God was there watching over him. Do you trust God with your children, with His care, with His purpose? She knew God through her prayer life. He had blessed her with a son, and she knew He would bless him and her in the future. God had a special purpose for him, and He has a special purpose for you and your children. As parents, our goal should not be to keep our kids as close as possible, which is always a strong desire, but to train them for God's service no matter where they end up living. When we are faithful, God will bless us with more than we ask. That's another lesson that we learn. When she gave up Samuel after 3 years, she wasn't pregnant again. No promise that she would have other children. She gave her best to God. God gave her His best. And now she gave God her best. And what does God do then? He gives even more than what she could have ever imagined. She gave her first, faithfulness. And Hannah made the choice to invest in her family, invest in her faith, invest in her future by giving her firstborn son to God with no promise of anything in return. But God gave her 3 sons and 2 daughters, more than she could have ever imagined after all the years of not being able to have children. But what we see from Hannah is that she was a consistent mom, a committed mom. She bathed her family and her son in prayer. She supported him in his ministry. She stayed involved. She made a commitment when her child was blessed into service, and she stuck with it. Hannah knew that and lived that. Hannah's love for God was her top priority, and because of that consistency and commitment, God blessed her. It doesn't mean all of her life was easy. It doesn't mean it was without hurt and cruelty. No, it doesn't. But it does mean that God is faithful. Especially in today's environment, do our children see our faith in the midst of crisis? I'm so thankful for all the ladies that are out there that have made a difference in children's life that may have not been blessed with their own children, but they continue to make a difference. I'm reminded of Anna Mae Dukeman, one of my Sunday school teachers from 9th Street Christian Church. She was a teacher in the public school, but she was also a teacher in her church. She made a difference with countless lives through her influence. I think of my Aunt Barbara, who still makes an influence in my life today, encouraging me, praying for me. I think of my friend Benita Bond as well, who fostered children, still makes a difference with those grandchildren, with children around her in the classroom as a teacher. I think of my niece Audrey that's teaching as well and making a difference with her life. So many in our church here that are doing the same thing. You may not have your own children, but you still make a difference in children's life, and I'm thankful for ladies like that every day. I love the story of faithfulness of Hannah, a mother's love for God that resulted in a mother's love for her son. But it starts with coming to God, bringing Him the concerns of your heart, and letting the great physician Jesus heal your brokenness and fill the emptiness in your life with His peace and His love.